far as I could see, the big success of the summit was the naming of the issue in the way that it was named, and the sense that out of that will come cultural change. So what I mean by that is, I often think of our own situation in Ireland and in other parts of the English-speaking world where this issue arose first. There's a book by L.P. Hartley, The Go-Between, and he starts it by saying, the past is a foreign country, they do things differently there. And if you think back to the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, this abuse was going on, but it wasn't spoken about. With rare exceptions, Michael Viney in the Irish Times did something in the 60s. It was a rare exception. And when something, for whatever reason, isn't spoken about, you can't deal with it. So there's some cultural thing there around denial. And it's terribly important to break that. And in Ireland, we thank mainly, I'd say, the media, the secular media, for doing that. And I think in many parts of the world, that culture of denial still exists. Not just in the Catholic Church, but certainly in the Catholic Church. And so in parts of the world like Africa, like India, South America, Malaysia, there is that sense that this issue hasn't been taken on board. It isn't talked about. And so when you had all these heads of hierarchies from all over the world and cardinals gathered, and they were addressed by victims and survivors, giving their own harrowing experiences and the effect that that had had on themselves and on their families. When you had a Nigerian sister standing up just a few yards away from the Pope and asking the bishops why they were so mediocre, why they were so hypocritical, in very, very straight kind of language, that seems to me to be very hopeful, because that puts the issue on the agenda. And you could see from the responses of people, some people going in were saying, this is not our issue. But coming out, they were saying something very differently. And that's one part of the culture of peace. Just very quickly, the other part of the culture of peace is clericalism. I do think we don't fully understand pedophilia. We don't fully understand the reasons for it, and all kinds of theories have been suggested. But certainly a contributing factor to the cover-up, if not the actual pedophilia, is that sense of entitlement that's known as clericalism. And again, to see bishops having, if you like, to submit themselves to very, very straight talking, and seeing the Pope himself time and again identify clericalism as the root of all of this, seems to me to be very hopeful.
Yeah, going back to the victims, as you mentioned there, it was powerful. I think also we maybe thought we couldn't be shocked anymore by revelations. And yet, from another angle, like you had an African sister saying that she was repeatedly raped by a priest and had three abortions. You know, in a church that has spoken out about abortion for so many years with such vigour and rigour, to hear that, the impact must have been, you can only imagine what it must have been like to be sitting there. And that was so important that those voices were heard.
No, absolutely. And again, it's this business of getting things out into the open, because you can't change things unless that happens. And I do think there are many similar issues. And when the Pope is talking about a new form of church and trying to put in structures and institutions, but also trying to change the culture so that people, he's encouraging people to be open and frank in debate and discussion. So very often, sadly, but very understandably, those most opposed to rights for homosexuals, for gay people, are themselves gay. And it's a very understandable mechanism that goes on, because they've been taught to hate what they are themselves, and then they project outwards. You can think of many other issues, including the whole issue of women priests. We can't tackle those issues by keeping silent. And one of the great contributors to the Second Vatican Council, he was a Melkite patriarch, Athenagoras, had that phrase, repressed truth turns poisonous. And it really is. It's like a cancer that eats away. And of course, you can't get to the truth if you can't discuss and if you can't share views. So it seems to me, of course, awful things go on. We're human beings. But the most awful thing is when they're not admitted, when they're not, when there's no possibility of talking about them. And so children continue to suffer and their families continue to suffer. And now there is this awful thing now that the ordinary Catholic in the pew feels shattered by this. I mean, who can they trust? It's just one thing after another. And I think it is a very painful period to say that you're a Catholic. I mean, I think it's one thing to say I hold on to my faith in Jesus or I'm still religious, but to belong to the church is really a big ask for so many people at the moment. And yet, I think you can see that it's almost a necessary process to go through. It's better than denial. It's better than not doing anything about it. And please God, as the culture changes and the guidelines are put into effect and the reporting to civil authorities takes place, it will become true that the Catholic Church becomes a very safe place for children. That will not, of course, overnight, and it'll take many generations for it to regain the trust of so many people.
Do you think that mindset is beginning to change among clergy with the unmasking of clericalism, as Pope Francis is trying to do, that they have to see the enormity of what this sexual abuse crisis really is and what it has done to ordinary people, not least, of course, the victims and the survivors, but on their families, but just also the faithful people who are really wounded and angry and gutted?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, I think, again, that the initial reaction, and I know our own situation in Ireland, and indeed our own Jesuit situation, the initial reaction was institutional defensiveness. So you look back to probably the mid to late 80s and into the early 90s, and that was the predominant. And of course, you can see we're doing this interview on the day that the victims in Derry are looking for some kind of redress for Bloody Sunday. And we know that in politics too, in political life, that that is an institutional reflex almost, that kind of defensiveness. It's no excuse. And certainly I think that the Catholic Church in Ireland and in America and in Britain and in Australia has learnt a lot. And I think that there's a real sense now. And the main learning, I think, has come from the victims and survivors. It's seeing them now as protagonists, not as victims. You cannot be unaffected. I have sat down with people who have been abused. And I was with Pope Francis last August when he came from that meeting with six or eight people who had been abused. And I saw it in his face and I knew what I had felt too. You are shattered when you hear that kind of thing, shattered. And no amount of reading files or looking at psychological theories can prepare you for that. So I do think that there is a big, big change going on. And the only thing I'd say is that justice has to be served, both civilly and morally. So there's no doubt about that. But the great scandal, if you like, of the Christian message is that God loves everyone and mercy. And there's a peculiar kind of thing in the civil society now, and it's also present in all of us, of a kind of vengeful, merciless hounding of people. And in some sense, I remember doing this in my theology with people like Balthasar and Rahner and trying to look at, did God want to save everyone? And if you want to hold that there is a hope that everyone will be saved, you have to say that Hitler, that Pol Pot, that Stalin, that the paedophile priest, that the bishop who covered up, somehow are covered by the mercy of God. Doesn't detract at all from the fact that justice has to be served. And that's, if you like, it's counterintuitive and it's a huge scandal. And yet it's at the core of our Christian faith. And I suppose the only way that I can live with that, I mean, you can try to work it out speculatively, is that I've experienced it myself. I know I'm a sinner. I really do. I know I've done things which are awful. I have avoided doing things which I should have done. I need God's mercy. And I think in the end, that kind of self-awareness is something that helps us, if you like, to see that these awful things have to be condemned, that justice has to be sought. And yet somehow we have to try to put on the mind of Christ, which is the mind of the merciful and tender God who embraces all. And that's a real, real challenge.